From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Accelerate. He's coming down to the 16th pole in front. Thunderstorm on the inside is next. Then Mendelssohn, Gunavera, and Yoshida on the far outside. They're coming to the wire. And Accelerate wins the Breeders' Cup Classic for John Sadler.
Wondergadot's in front, and she's dashed away in the Queen's Plate, ahead by a century and a second. But there's no doubt who's the best today, and it's all about Wondergadot, Wonder Woman herself, demolishing them in the Queen's Plate.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And they bump there. Game winner on the outside takes the lead. On the inside, it's Nick Scone, who fights on but will be second best as they come down to the line. He doesn't know how to lose. He's game winner in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. They come to the final 16th. Good Magic on the outside is second. Audible third toward the inside. Then it's still Regard. They're coming to the wire. He's just awesome. Justify has won the Kentucky Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Baron and Pontiff, that's Mike Penna and Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you with us, tuned in throughout the country on Sirius 219, XM 201, and everybody tuned in worldwide. You're doing that on our website at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you along for the ride for the next 2 hours this morning. And I would say that we are looking out on the bluegrass this morning, but it's not the case. The bluegrass covered in a blanket of white snow. And Jude, I have to tell you, not only here in the bluegrass, but a lot of people around the country right now dealing with snowy conditions. And it's not a lot. It's an inch or two, but it's enough to make it really pretty out there. And as I was coming in, I drive past Calumet Farm, and Calumet, one of the few farms that still has those iconic white fences. And as you look out, usually you see the white fences over the rolling hills, and it's just a gorgeous setting in the mornings. This morning, it was hard to differentiate the white fences from the white on the ground. It was kind of neat. They kind of were camouflaged and blended in.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Calumet's just beautiful. I love flying over it, coming into Lexington Airport. And it's white. The only thing worse than white snow is yellow snow. So
yeah, good tip of the day, right? Don't eat yellow snow. 112 days, 9 hours, 47 minutes, and 7 seconds until the Run for the Roses. See how I snuck that in?
Well, I knew it was coming sooner or later. Probably just sooner.
A little thought to warm you up on this day, that 112 days will go by very quickly. The first Saturday in May. You wouldn't expect that we would have snow on the first Saturday in May.
No, I would, you wouldn't I would expect. Not expect it. Don't expect me to be in town if that's the case.
Although we have had it in April.
Yes, we have.
For the spring meet.
Opening day of Keeneland.
Yeah. I remember standing there with Kurt up in the announcer's booth one day, and it was the April meet, and he looked out, and it was kind of late in the April meet, too. And he put his binoculars up. They were starting the race on the backstretch, and he put his binoculars up, and there was so much snow, and it was blowing so hard, he couldn't see a thing, right? Now, maybe with the binoculars he was able to, but from the naked eye, you couldn't see the starting gate. You couldn't see the horses when they broke. And somehow he didn't miss a beat. He was able to call the whole thing, which was just amazing to me.
Yeah, he's very talented, and it is amazing some of the things that he can do. And he's old school. He doesn't draw on his program or any of that stuff. It's all in his mind.
I've watched him make notes on just a regular yellow notepad. He'll write down the horse's name, and then next to the horse's name, as he's watching them on the TV in the walking ring before the race, he'll make little notes, and he'll write down white blinkers or white blaze, right? Whatever it is, just something to trigger him so he knows that when he sees that, that's that horse. And to me, that's remarkable.
Yeah, and he's not looking at that when he's calling the race. That's just his way of ingraining it in his mind,
yeah, you know,
which is amazing.
Well, considering the fact that the Derby is edging ever closer, and we'll give you an update on that as we move throughout the program, by the way. I know you're looking
forward to
that.
We got a lot of time to fill, folks.
We're going to talk Kentucky Derby. It's never too early to start looking at the Derby picture. There have been several points races already contested. There will be many, many more over the next couple of months as we lead up to that first Saturday in May. So we're going to visit with Darren Rogers from Churchill coming up in our first segment right around 8:15 Eastern. Darren, the Senior Vice President of Communications, always a great guest on the program. He'll touch on some of the things happening early in the season here with the Derby Trail. He'll touch on those horses, kind of fill you in on some horses to keep an eye on. And he's also going to talk about some news that came out just a day or two ago about that $3 million, the $3 million value for the Kentucky Derby now. It's a purse increase and pretty good stuff. So we'll talk to him coming up in just a little bit.
Yeah, $3 million for the Derby.
You had an interesting take on that. We were talking about this before we came on air.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the purse should be a dollar.
And why? Why is that?
Well, because everybody wants to win the Derby. They're not running for the money. They're running for the prestige. They want to be able to answer that question. Yes, I did win the Kentucky Derby when there.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. Now, whether it's a dollar or not, but I think if you made it, you know, just $1 million, right, to keep it in line with other major stakes races, if, let's just say for argument's sake that the Derby was only $1 million and it wasn't $3 million, it's not going to – people aren't going to not run in the Kentucky Derby because it's only $1 million purse and not $3 million.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to abuse your privileges because you have the Kentucky Derby, I understand. And I understand why they raise it to $3 million, and I'm sure there's some people that think it should be $10 million or $20 million. It's the United States' most important race, obviously. But, I don't think people are competing for the purse necessarily. It's more for the bragging rights and, so I'd like, as a former trainer, I would like to see that money put into the overnight purses.
Right, right. Well, that's
help
one
everybody
school of
out.
Yeah, that's one school of thought. We'll ask Darren. We'll talk to him about that and kind of the thought process.
I'm sure he's going to want to discuss that.
No. I guess where I'm going with that is we'll ask him that kind of the thought process that goes into raising a race like the Kentucky Derby to $3 million.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, as opposed to, like you said, I mean, that's a legitimate argument, taking that money and putting it into other races throughout the rest of the meet.
Right.
Right? I mean, I think it's a legitimate question. We'll ask him.
Yeah.
And he'll be happy to answer it. I'm sure he will. He'll be thrilled. He'll be thrilled with that one. But we'll hit him up with that here coming up at 8:15 Eastern. Dermot Carty from Medina Springs is scheduled to come in studio with us for our Stallion Spotlight segment, which is all presented by our friends at Red Brand Fence. He'll be with us right around 8:45 Eastern time to preview that unbelievable Stallion roster at Edina Springs. 9 o'clock Eastern, going to visit with our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris. That is our colleague here on the network, our good friend, the little A, Acacia Courtney, who is now a two-time Miss Connecticut. As of last Saturday, she was crowned Miss Connecticut USA. You remember a few years back, she won Miss Connecticut for the Miss America pageant. This is different. This is the Miss USA pageant. We're going to talk to her about that experience. It was cool. My wife, Michelle, and I were watching the replay. We couldn't watch it live, but one of Acacia's friends had put the replay video out there online, and we were watching it. And, you know, I've watched Miss America pageants and Miss USAs before, and you see them get down to the final five, and that's always exciting. But I didn't know anybody that was in that grouping, right? Now we know Acacia. And then they got down to the final two, and she's in the final two. So they're getting ready to announce the first runner-up, which, of course, means that they're second place.
That's the loser.
The loser, right? And watching this, I mean, I had butterflies. I was nervous for Acacia. And then when the other young lady's name was called as the first runner-up and Acacia was the winner, it was really cool to know somebody that was actually in that position.
Yeah. Well, it's a big deal to a lot of people, and Acacia worked hard to get there. I'm not really a pageant guy, but I understand the importance of it to the people that participate. And it was cool to follow along as she was going through the rigmarole of the pageants. You don't really realize, how much work is involved in it.
Yeah.
You know, you just think, oh, the girls put on a dress and walk down the runway or whatever, and
it's a lot of work.
There's a lot more involved than that, so Yeah, it's a tremendous thing that she accomplished, because she was out of that scene for quite a while.
Yeah. So then jump back into it.
Yeah.
Yep. And she's going to compete now for Miss USA. And if she wins that, she'll go on and compete for Miss Universe. But let's not put the cart before the horse, one step at a time. I believe that pageant is in May, but we'll get an update from Acacia when she joins us on that particular event. And she'll be with us at 9 o'clock Eastern. And then toward the end of the program, Joe Harper, who is the man running Del Mar, has been doing it for, believe it or not, four decades. Joe is going to be with us at 9:40 Eastern time. Joe will be honored at the Eclipse Awards in a couple of weeks at Gulfstream Park with the Eclipse Award of Merit to honor and recognize a lifetime of outstanding achievement in the thoroughbred industry. And Joe certainly deserving of that honor.
Yeah, he's a tremendous guy and fun to hang out with. Has a great background in racing. His mother was one of the biggest breeders in California at one time. His family's been in the business a long time. He does a great job with Del Mar. He's known all over the world, and really cool honor for him.
Isn't he the grandson of Cecil B. DeMille?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, so we'll get
ready on the set, CB.
We'll get a chance to talk to Joe at 9:40 Eastern. You know, maybe I should remind him or bring this up to him that when he started at Del Mar in 1978, I was 7. Should I bring that up to him?
If you want. I don't know if you're trying to make him feel old or make you sound young, but either way, it is what it is.
It's a remarkable run for him, really. I mean, 40 years as the head of Del Mar and the chief executive officer of the Del Mar Thoroughbred Club. So really looking forward to that visit. We'll talk to him about his time in racing. And I'm sure that, you know, 15 minutes in that segment is not going to be enough. He's somebody that you could sit down and talk with for a couple of hours and have plenty of fill.
Oh, yeah. No, we had him on for Breeders' Cup when Breeders' Cup was at Del Mar. And that was one of the most fun interviews, I think, that we ever did on this show. He's a guy that loves the sport, and he's got a great sense of humor. And one thing about Joe, he's a guy that's vital to the thoroughbred industry in California, but he's never taken himself too seriously. He's there to guide Del Mar, but he's also a guy that has a lot of fun doing it. So that's important, and I think that's the key to his success.
We are also only 2 weeks away from the Pegasus World Cup. We'll be there on January 26th at Gulfstream Park to bring you the exclusive radio coverage of the Pegasus World Cup and the Pegasus World Cup Turf, which is new this year. You'll hear all that coverage with us here on HRN January 26th, live from Gulfstream Park. So we will spend a little bit of time talking about the Pegasus World Cup and some of the horses pointing for that event. It truly is going to be a World Cup this year at Gulfstream Park, and we'll tell you more about that as we move throughout the show. Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs, he's set to join us next right here on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
FDB stands for Flashy Debut Breakthrough.
Free Drop Billy is on the move, needs to find a seam and splits horses decisively. Free Drop Billy, who wins it by 2.5 in the end.
FDB stands for Fast Dirt Brilliance.
Into the final furlong of the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity. Free Drop Billy opening up by 3. Bravazo wins second, but no catching. Free Drop Billy, who wins it.
Free Drop Billy, Union Rags' only grade 1 winner at stud. New for 2019 at Spendthrift Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Heard about the new 3E tractors from John Deere?
What's new?
New look, better maneuverability than those other color tractors, added conveniences like onboard diagnostics to make for an easier day, and all-around greater performance.
Well, sounds interesting.
They also have one of the lowest sticker prices in the industry.
Sounds like I'm in.
Just head to your John Deere dealer. I'm sure they'll take care of you.
Sounds like they already have.
Introducing the all-new 2018 John Deere 3E Series tractors. More functionality, same affordability.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
This is jockey Julian Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
And they're into the stretch, and it's just a defiant Mike Smith turning for home in front. Good Magic and Jose Ortiz a link behind as they come into the final furlong. Bravazo's down the center of the track, and then Audible on the inside, who's now up in a third. Justify a two-length lead as they come to the final 16th. Good Magic on the outside is second. Audible third toward the inside, then it's still Regard. They're coming to the wire. He's just awesome. Justify has won the Kentucky Derby. It was very close for a second. Audible may have got there inside of Good Magic. Then it's still Regard. And a final time of 2 minutes 4.20 seconds. He's still undefeated.
Larry Colmus with the call of last year's running of the Kentucky Derby. Justify making the Derby the first stop along his Triple Crown Tour de Force. He would take the Triple Crown by winning the Belmont Stakes 5 weeks later, and he would take down the lion's share of the $2 million Kentucky Derby purse, which sounds great until you go back and read what happened just a day or two ago. Churchill announcing that the Kentucky Derby would receive a purse increase from $2 million now all the way to $3 million. So Justify, even though he won the Triple Crown, maybe missed out on a little bit of money by doing that 1 year too early, but that's okay. He'll be happy with the results, as is Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs. He's the senior vice president of communications. He joins us now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Darren, good morning, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Good morning, Jude.
How's it going?
It's great. it's been a great week. anytime you can announce purse increases of more than $2 million, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, let's touch on that. It's not just the Kentucky Derby. There were several other stakes races throughout the spring meet that are going to receive a purse increase. Talk about that, Darren.
Yeah, but, you know, obviously the Derby was raised from $2 million to $3 million, but, you know, one of the more exciting things, the race immediately preceding the Derby is the Old Forester Turf Classic. We've doubled the purse of that race from $500,000 to $1 million, and we think with that raise might make it a little more attractive for some potential international competitors. You know, the marquee the day before is the Longines Kentucky Oaks. We've raised the purse on that $250,000, so it's $1.25 million. It remains the most lucrative race in the nation for 3-year-old fillies. And then in addition to those three, you know, we, 12 other stakes races received purse increases, and we were able to create two more. Ben Huffman and his team did a fabulous job with spreading the money around. A large part of it focuses on Derby Week. The Derby Week stakes, we now have 18 of them worth more than $9.5 million. And all this, you know, increase is due and attributed to the early returns from the Derby City Gaming that we opened up in mid-September. And that, of course, has the historical racing machines. Business has been strong. And the recent investment into that facility, as you can see, it's paying immediate dividends to Kentucky Horsemen.
Well, the $3 million is nice, but you could run the Kentucky Derby with a dollar purse and you'd still have plenty of entries.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you bring up a great point because, you know, I mean, you want them to run for good money, but as you know, it's a stallion-making race. And as you were about to allude to, you win the race, you're worth tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is good, and yeah, I know you guys have to keep in line with other big races, and you know you want to be the signature event of the Triple Crown, which you are, whether you advertise it or not.
Yeah, there's only one Kentucky Derby.
I mean, it's a great spot to be in. So I guess it's generous of you in a way, but to me, it's more important that some of those other races got boosts to attract, as you say, foreign horses and you know, pick up people's heads and let them know what's going on Derby Week. I mean, Derby Week's one of the greatest events in our sport internationally, I think. I mean, always fantastic racing Derby Week. You can't pass it up.
It is, and with some of these, you know, purses being raised, you know, we hope, you know, yes, it is strong internationally. Let's get some more international runners. We saw a little bit last year. Aiden O'Brien brought a horse over for the Old Forester Turf Classic, but, you know, if we raise that race to $1 million early in the year at a mile and eighth on the turf, we think we might be able to attract even more. And you're right. It's great that we've spread this money into stakes races, but I want the horsemen and the fans out there to know that this is just the beginning. You know, more than $30 million in total prize money is going to be offered during the 38-day spring meet.
Wow.
A year ago, we just offered a little north of $22 million. So it's an $8 million overall increase that you're about to see. Ben Huffman, I know he's getting close to sending that first condition book off to the printer, our director of racing. But, you know, you saw a little teaser during the fall meet. We were able to raise the purses at the fall meet 20%. You saw maiden special weight races, for example, at $76,000. Kentucky racing right now, thanks to the steady growth of available prize money through the advancement and the handle figures over at Derby City Gaming. Kentucky racing is the place to be right now.
Yeah, and I don't want to gloss over that fact, Darren. You mentioned Derby City Gaming. There are people listening right now that maybe have not heard of that new facility and don't know what we're talking about there. So kind of expand on that a little bit and talk about what Derby City Gaming is, where it's located, and why it has helped increase these purses so much.
So about a year ago, Churchill Downs Incorporated invested $65 million into building a state-of-the-art historical racing machine facility located at Trackside Louisville, which is about, you know, 5 miles away from Churchill Downs, where old Trackside Louisville Downs used to be. Now, the training center is still there, but there's a state-of-the-art historical racing machine facility, and it really, really is nice. Obviously, it's pari-mutuel. Part of the historical racing machine funds go directly to fueling prize money at Churchill Downs. And so, you know, again, as I said, the business has been strong since mid-September when it opened, and it's absolutely gratifying to be able to, you know, meaningfully raise the purse money of these important races at Churchill Downs and advance the overall racing program.
Well, it's certainly a boost, and we've seen what it's done, you know, at Kentucky Downs. I mean, Kentucky Downs got to the point where they were passing out money to Churchill and Keeneland, so you don't see that every day.
No, you don't.
So, you know, it's a thing where Churchill has a lot of power to really progress the sport in Kentucky, and it looks like it's going to happen.
Well, we race more racing dates than any track in Kentucky, and so we have 70 dates overall.
Yeah.
So to be able to spread this out and supercharge the purses over the course of our 70 racing dates throughout the year, it's very exciting. I mean, look at how stable is the Kentucky circuit right now. I mean, with the strength of, you know, Keeneland and Churchill, Ellis Park is doing good. Kentucky Downs for the 5 days is truly exciting. We now have the September meet, which is a bridge to the Keeneland and Churchill Downs fall meets. It's really a strong year-round circuit. We're thrilled that this prize money, I think, is going to attract a number of new barns or old barns coming back to Churchill Downs. I do not envy Ben Huffman and stallman Steve Hargrave when they have to allocate stalls, because it's going to be very difficult, I think.
Yeah, no question. Everybody's going to want to run for those increased purses. Yep. And as you said, the entire circuit very strong now here in the state of Kentucky, and that's good to see. It's good for the sport, good for the industry as a whole. And Churchill Downs and Kentucky Downs, Keeneland, they're all kind of leading the charge here and moving the sport forward in the state. Darren, I know you know this better than anybody. 112 days, 9 hours, 23 minutes, and now just 31 seconds until that Run for the Roses on the first Saturday in May. So let's talk a little early Derby here. You look at the Road to the Kentucky Derby leaderboard at KentuckyDerby.com, and you see the name Game Winner at the top, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner for Bob Baffert. You see Nixgo number 2, Signalman number 3, Gunmetal Gray, who just had that big win in the Sham at Santa Anita last weekend, comes in at number 4, and then Long Range Toddy at number 5. Tell us a little bit about this early Derby picture.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this, guys. Are you guys golf fans at all?
Yes.
You know, like, so this is a little bit like the Masters, and I think we finished day one. And after day one, posting the scores, you know, I would think that, you know, Game Winner, clearly the juvenile champion, he's posted the top score, and I think Maximus Mischief, the Remsen winner, those are the two most intriguing horses that we've seen thus far on the Road to the Derby. I think they're the ones to catch. You got to catch up to them. But as you know, in golf and in horse racing, a lot can happen on day two, and I think we're in the midst of the early stages of day two. When we get to the start of the championship series, it's a little bit like day three, and you get to that final, you know, the big 100-point races. We're now on the final day. So we're in the real early stages right now. The leaderboard's starting to sort itself out. But to me, again, I think Game Winner and Maximus Mischief, to my eyes, they're the ones you've got to go out and catch and show that you're as fast as they are. And we'll see what happens. As you know, a lot can happen on this Road to the Derby.
Yeah, there's a lot of twists and turns on the road.
Yes,
it's not a straight line, hardly ever a straight line.
It's never straight.
The big points races really don't begin until we start getting into middle of February and then into March. We start seeing points races that are worth 50 points and, you know, 20 points internationally, 30 points internationally. And that's another aspect of this year's Derby Trail. You have the Japanese Road to the Kentucky Derby. You have the European Road to the Kentucky Derby. That throws a little bit of a chink into some of the plans for some of the American horses, doesn't it?
Well, I don't think so.
No?
I think you still run. No, I think you run your race and you just see if, you know, whether or not a winner of either one of those series could possibly take up two spots. I mean, you're just trying to prepare your horse to go a mile and a quarter on the first Saturday in May, And a lot of times you're either fast enough or you're not.
Yep.
It's, I mean, I hate to simplify it like that, but sometimes that's really what it is. So I don't think the plans change a whole lot. But to your point, a lot of the top two-year-olds, you know, that showed promise, you know, in the summer and the fall of last year, they're sitting and waiting in the wings. I mean, don't be alarmed if your horse that you're looking at. I've always used the Super Bowl as kind of the benchmark. You want your horse on the work tab from a steady standpoint from the Super Bowl on. So you get in, you know, early February, you want to start seeing that workout. But if he hasn't worked out yet, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. They might be getting tuned up. But right now, it's a prep season. I mean, it really is. You're just trying to see where you are. You're not fully cranked. You want to debut some horses and look for some potential. But the big push is going to come once we get into, you know, March and April.
You know, you remember I was not a big fan of the point system when it came out. And yep. and I am now. I think it's done a tremendous job of getting the best horses in the starting gate. I mean, I think it's proven itself. And, there, you know, you guys still tweak it here and there, but I think that's necessary. I think it's really been efficient and effective.
Yeah, thanks, Jude. And I'll be honest with you. I think I tried to sell it early on when we debuted it, but I really don't believe it's that significantly different other than the fact that we're not awarding, as I like to call it, scholarships for big money wins early on in the two-year-old and early, you know, say if somebody threw up a $1 million race tomorrow, that horse would automatically be in, the runner-up would already be in. I think the horsemen are really training their horses the same way that they used to. I know some people disagree with that. They think they're sitting on them. They were sitting on them before. They were waiting for the big push. And as you can, you know, all you have to do is look at the purses of these the 50-point races and the 100-point races. You know, they're typically around the $300,000 to $500,000 range, and then they jump up to the $750,000 to $1 million range. The points escalate like the purses do, and so rather than awarding scholarships early on, you're seeing a push late, and you know, we're getting the right horses. You know, horses that are prepared to go a mile and a quarter on the first Saturday in May. And that's always been the mission of, you know, us stewards at Churchill Downs. I mean, that's what our goal is to attract that. And yeah, I think we've done that. I can't wait for the talk. It's right around the corner. Has the point system produced a favorite every year? I mean, which it has. I can't deny it. This is, you know, we're 6 years in, and you know, favorites have won each year since we debuted in 2013. But I do truly believe that that's a statistical anomaly myself.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. And, of course, that Kentucky Derby will be here before we know it. Again, just 112 days away. Darren, appreciate the visit. As always, my friend, like all of our guests who appear on the program, we'll send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. And we look forward to catching up with you down the road as we move closer to the Run for the Roses.
Mike, Jude, always great visiting with you.
All right. Darren Rogers, Senior Vice President of Communications at Churchill. That'll warm you up a little bit on this cold day here in the Bluegrass and cold day around much of the country. Talk a little Derby and start thinking about some of those horses that could potentially make an impact on the first Saturday in May.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And that's what it is at this point, right? You don't know if you're a contender or a pretender at this point.
Yeah.
Right? You just don't know. I mean, everybody's a contender right now.
Right. I mean, even Game Winner with all of his accolades and stuff, he hasn't run yet this year. He's got to prove that he can do it at three he did it at two. So everybody's in the mix. Nick's Go, another interesting horse.
Yeah. I mean, there's
showed a lot, and we'll see what he's up to.
So. Yeah, a lot of ways to go. We are going to go ahead and get to our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every single Saturday at this time by the Lexus store of Lexington. And I tell you, every week you go see them. They want to be the dealership of the equine industry in central Kentucky. They've been doing it for a very, very long time. You go see the godfather, Tony Attiano, and he'll talk some horses with you. And he'll also show you a few cars. And you'll love that new Lexus. I promise you that. You won't be disappointed. Make sure you go see the godfather. If he doesn't answer to the godfather, try the Golden Goyim. Yeah, that's another one that he goes by. I found this out the other day, by the way.
Wow. No comment.
Go figure. He answers to both. It's the Lexus store of Lexington, the corner of New Circle and Liberty, and this is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
The story of this great thoroughbred might easily fit the needed scenario for a five-star bit of Hollywood magic. All the necessary ingredients are indeed there. In the summer of 1940, because of protracted German bombing of the British Isles, the British Bloodstock Agency offered for sale five stallions to American interests. Mr. C.B. Whitney purchased one who had won the Epsom Derby in record time. The contemporaries of the time cast a rather jaundiced eye, so to speak, on the purchase, in that the horse was considered to be essentially a sprinter, with little consequent, at least apparently, chance of upgrading American breeding strains. The fact is, the 7-year-old gray very nearly never made it to America at all. Now, that in itself is a fascinating story which bears retelling. He was transported to America by ship, or at least was supposed to be, and accordingly installed in a crate and hoisted aboard a vessel which was part of a convoy headed across the Atlantic. Soon after sailing, the captain of the freighter discovered the horse's bill of lading, and, as this manifest forbade him from taking on livestock, the horse was returned to the dock. That, as it turned out, was a providential stroke of good fortune. You see, that particular vessel was torpedoed by a German U-boat and went to a watery grave at the bottom of the briny deep with nary a trace of a survivor. A subsequent freighter brought the equine specimen to American shores. At the New York dock assignated as the debarkation point, there was no horse unloading equipment, so it was decided to take him off the ship via a long and treacherously steep passenger gangplank. While he stood at the top, pensively surveying the scene and waited, filled with curiosity, steadfastly refusing debarkation. Straw was used to line the gangplank, and he was fed hay, all to no avail. Eventually, he was enticed down with sugar. Curiously enough, many of this stallion's get demonstrated that self-same temperament which was displayed at the New York dock in that year of 1940. When one of our subject stallion's daughter's first flight with a crafty veteran reinsman Hetty Eddie Arcaro in the irons came out onto the racetrack for the 1946 Futurity, she stopped for an extended time in front of the stands, not acting up, mind you, just looking up and down the track until her curiosity was fully satisfied. She then went calmly, quietly and professionally to the starting gate and promptly galloped off to an impressive score over the very best colts the East could offer by way of opposition. In the breeding shed, this stud was awesome, and the reason was really quite simple. He had five characteristics that were of paramount importance in passing on to new foals: soundness, speed, confirmation, fertility, and something that cannot be seen or measured, his natural intelligence and temperament, which made his progeny very easy to handle. He was, in his prime in the breeding shed, the unequivocal, undisputedly foremost broodmare sire in the world. All told, he begat 68 stakes winners and was North America's leading sire in 1946, and he was a leading sire for 14 straight years. That marvelous gray stallion knew and appreciated human affection, and yet did not exploit it. He was never too busy to stroll to his paddock fence for an endearing pat. He was kind, gentle, and uncomplicated. His nickname was Toby, but this great stallion, whose name is indelibly etched in the now yellowing pages of American racing history, was Mahmood.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family.
If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the Godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
You know, our Jimmy John's new 9-grain wheat sub has the perfect amount of grain.
Freak, yeah, it does. Any less, it'd be grain lacking. Any more, it'd be obnoxious.
9 grains. It's just so confident. I mean, it says I'm high quality, I'm substantial, I'm flavorful, but I don't have to prove myself to anyone.
This 9-grain wheat sub is practically an inspirational poster.
I want to possess the character and depth of this 9-grain wheat sub.
You guys talking about being that 9-grain wheat sub again?
Try our new 9-grain wheat sub, Jimmy John's. Wheat, yeah, freak, yeah.
Adina Spring Stallion, point of entry.
As they come down to the finish, point of entry scores to win the Man of War by 4 lengths.
A 5-time Grade 1 winner, viewed by many to be the heir to Dynaforma's global legacy.
Wild final furlong coming here in the Sword Dancer, and here comes point of entry, who's running to daylight.
The first horse since theatrical to win the New York Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined 9 lengths.
It is point of entry in front. Treasure Beach can't stay with him. Kindergarten Kid comes down the inside from third, and they're coming down to the finish. And point of entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a 5-race winning streak.
Now, with winners in 8 countries on all surfaces, up to 10 furlongs, including the sensational multi-graded stakes winner, Analyze It, in his first crop, and stakes winner and Grade 1 placed My Gal Betty from his second crop. The heir to Dynaformer and the next global sire is Point of Entry. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Hey, welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have you back with us here on the program. Darren Rogers in the last segment, outstanding, talking about some of the early Derby horses you can keep an eye on, also talking about those purse increases for the spring meet at Churchill Downs, including that big one in the Kentucky Derby. $1 million added to the purse of the Derby. If you missed it, don't forget you can check out the podcast of this program anytime at your leisure on our website, horseracingradio.net. So head back over and listen. Jude, we got so busy with the kind of the technical elements of the show in the first couple of segments that I was remiss in not throwing out our poll question today on our Twitter feed at HRN. And of course, you can do it. You can weigh in on Facebook too, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. But I thought this morning, instead of doing a poll question, we would just throw out a general question and let people have some fun with this one. And I was thinking as I was driving in about something that would be different. I said, okay, how about this? What is your all-time favorite racehorse name? Not your favorite racehorse necessarily, but your all-time favorite racehorse name. Do you have one?
Me? Oh, yeah.
I'm putting you on the spot. Do you have one?
Missionary Stew.
Missionary Stew.
Yeah, Missionary Stew. It's one of the greatest horse names ever, in my opinion. And I'll tell you why in just a second.
I had a couple. I had a couple as I was thinking through. You know, because there have been so many horses we've seen over the years. You try to think about the names that stand out to you. There was a horse that ran in New York a long time ago that would always trip up track announcers. Flat Fleet Feet. That was one that I always kind of liked. There was a horse that ran at Rockingham Park. Remember Rockingham up in New Hampshire? As
yes.
I was growing up, I would go to Rockingham quite often. Mr. Sneak-a-Snack. I don't know. It just kind of stood out to me. I thought it was kind of a cute name. And then my favorite of all time, Steelers over Ravens. A Maryland bred at that.
There you go.
How about that one?
That's terrible for a Maryland bred. Missionary Stew was not the greatest horse that ever lived, but owned by Alfred Gwynn Vanderbilt. And Missionary Stew was a gray filly by Native Dancer out of Buffet Supper. And I thought that was just fantastic.
Yeah.
You can just imagine the missionary in the pot boiling away. just a fantastic name. She made a total of $5,375 in her life. 13 starts, 1 win, 3 places, and a show. But still, a great name.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt was one of the greatest horse namers of all time.
I may have a new one, though. I just read the headline at bloodhorse.com. Manitoba bred escape clause favored in La Cañada stakes. And the subheadline says, Going Commando Mare has won 15 stakes on dirt. Like Going Commando, that has to be one of the greatest horse names of all time, right?
Yes. I would think that would be right.
That's
there.
A new one for me right there. I just read it on bloodhorse.com. All right. You can weigh in at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Have a little fun this morning. Your all-time favorite racehorse name, and keep it clean. It has to be an actual racehorse that competed that you've watched over the years. So make sure you do that, and we'll read those results as we move throughout the program here this morning. Going to get to another quick break. When we come back, it is your Stallion Spotlight presented by Red Brand Fence, and we will visit with Dermot Carty and with Ken Wilkins from Edina Springs. We'll preview the Edina Stallion roster and what a roster it is. We'll tell you all about it next. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
2 years ago today, Motown scored an authoritative victory in the Grade 2 Remsen in his stakes debut, before going on to demonstrate an impressive turn of foot when winning the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby at 3. New to Coolmore America for 2019, Motown is a highly credentialed, beautiful young son of Uncle Mo, who has established himself as a leading sire with his runners on both dirt and turf. Motown is very attractively priced, and being such a good-looking horse, it is no surprise that he is proving incredibly popular with breeders. Call Coolmore America to book to him now before it's too late.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Airdrie Stud is proud to introduce McCracken for the 2019 breeding season. A brilliantly talented son of the great Ghost Sapper, McCracken recorded a dominant, undefeated two-year-old campaign, culminating with a sensational win in the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club. A multiple graded stakes winner and track record setter at 3, McCracken retires as the only two-year-old graded stakes winning colt by his elite sire, Ghost Sapper. Beautifully balanced from a deep female family, McCracken has everything it takes to be an important sire. Airdrie Stud's McCracken. Think about it.
Come on out to Santa Anita this weekend for great racing and a whole lot more. On Saturday, older fillies and mares take center stage in the Grade 2 La Cañada, and come early for our annual Vox Populi print giveaway and autograph session. And with winter upon us, check out our Front Runner brunch each weekend in the glass-enclosed Front Runner, along with free weekday general and clubhouse admission. On Fridays, we've got $2 beers and $6 specialty cocktails. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Power. Taprit is still there. Masterplan is gaining. Masterplan at Taprit. Taprit still in front. Masterplan too late. Taprit will do it.
Passion.
It's Taprit. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill. Well done, young man. We'll report home 4 lengths to the good.
Performance.
Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning two-year-old campaign, Taprit set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his three-year-old season. Among the best-bred sons of Taprit ever to enter stud, out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple graded stakes producer, Appealing Zofie. Taprit, standing for $12,500 at Gainsway.
Power. Passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, thoroughbred jockey, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Stallion Spotlight, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Here's Macho Uno! Macho Uno coming on to take the lead.
Point of entry is taking the lead! Point of entry has defeated Animal Kingdom!
A wild finish to the classic! Awesome again has won!
It knows and knows to the wire! Fort Lauded has won it!
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
And Ghost Zipper is pulling away impressively!
Mojo Benjamin! He did it!
Well, that little montage of the Edina Stallions and some of their top performances as they were on the racetrack. Boy, so many memorable moments and so many memorable moments in the Breeders' Cup Classic with those stallions, including the likes of Ghost Zapper and Mucho Macho Man and Fort Larned. The list goes on and on. And then you throw in the likes of Point of Entry and Awesome Again and Macho Uno, Shaman Ghost, who is now there. This is a stallion roster that doesn't take a backseat to anybody. And to help us preview that this morning on our Stallion Spotlight presented by Red Brand Fence, we welcome Dermot Carty and Ken Wilkins from Edina. Dermot, we're going to start with you here. By the way, good morning. Thank you guys for coming in studio.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, let's see if we can get the microphone turned on. And we'll be set to go. Give it one more shot.
Thank you very much.
All right. And you got it, Lee?
I don't know.
All right, we'll get this working, and we'll get a chance to visit with these gentlemen here momentarily. But, Jude, you think about that stallion roster, and they've been so good for so long. You know, the history of Edina Springs and the success that they have had in this business, really unparalleled.
Yeah, so many top horses, and they've been, you know, amongst the best breeders in the country year after year. So, you know, it's a tremendous operation, and they always have an excellent crew, and you can't say anything other than great things about them. It's amazing how it's developed over the years and gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. I remember when it first got going, and now it's massive.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Frank Stronach has done an amazing job. His vision has become a reality. And if you've never been to Edina Springs in Paris, you're really missing out. You go in there, and it is so gorgeous. It is like driving into a Disney World type of thing, right? Because it's so spectacular, right?
Yeah,
is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, I think that's it. That's good. I mean, for me, it's better than Disneyland. I think it's great. But, you know, and I go back a long ways. I go back to the days when Frank Stronach had turquoise and black colors, which probably nobody remembers.
Wow.
But, yeah.
All right, let's try it one more time. Dermot, give it one more shot. Let's see if that microphone's working now. If not, we'll get you a microphone that'll work. And
working.
Try it one more time.
We're going to try and see if this is working. Okay.
It's better.
Is it working, Lee? We good? Yeah. You want to try this one? All right. We're going to try another microphone for Dermot Carty here, and we'll see if that one works. Live radio. You got to love it, guys. Give it a shot.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. Yeah, that one's better.
Is that one better, Lee? We getting that one pretty good? All right, yeah. Dermot. Let's try this again. Welcome to the program, my friend.
Keep going back and forth here.
Yeah, that sounds good. There we go. We've got one working. We knew one of them would work. We have four in the studio, so you and I have one each, Jude, and we knew one of the other two has to work. We talked about that history just a moment ago, and the history with Frank and everything he's established has just been remarkable. Talk a little bit about that success and the Edina philosophy. What makes Edina so good, Dermot?
Let's go back to when Frank actually first got involved in racing. When he came over from Austria, of course, he started his parts manufacturing. And then he went out to look for something to do. As he always said, you have to have something in your pastime to give you some joy. And he decided to buy himself a couple of riding horses. And then, for some unknown reason, his guy that sold him horses invited him to come down to the races. And I asked Frank, I said, what was that like when you first went to the racetrack? And quote, unquote, I was mesmerized. It just stopped me. I just saw the beauty of everything. I was hooked. And those are his famous words, I was mesmerized. Then he decided that maybe he'd get into having some horses. And at that time, Frank was not a rich man. His own truck and trailer. He used to bought a couple of broodmares. He'd drive them down to Kentucky, bring them back home himself, go to work. And that's when Beechwood Farm was developed up in King City, Ontario originally. And then we moved it, was moved up to Newmarket, Ontario. And that's where he actually studied his first stallion by the horse named Sinister Purpose, who almost dethroned Vice Regent in his second year at stud. Unfortunately, he was a horse that died a little bit too early. Frank then went on to expand his business and got out of the stallion business. And, you know, he had mentioned then maybe he was thinking of coming back into it again. And remember a conversation we had, and he the first stallion that he bought, which he stud, was Al Wahush down here in Kentucky. And then he gave me an order to acquire a new stallion for him if I saw anything that I might like. And I was actually quite amazed by a horse called Sadler's Wells that was over in Ireland. And I made a call to a friend of mine, Ed Daly, to see if this horse could be bought. And of course, he said to me, dealing with Coolmore, I mean, it's going to be impossible. I said, nothing's impossible. So they had a horse by the name of El Prado that was champion two-year-old. And we made a bid to buy him. Well, we were getting nowhere. And Frank says, like, come on. You gotta move it on here if you're going to get it. Come and have a talk with me. And he says, when you're going to make a deal, he said, consider the deal done prior to going into the room. How you get there is when you get in the room and do the deal that way. And so I met with the Coolmore boys and realized that they weren't going to be that easy to deal with. But anyway, by the afternoon, I had done a deal to buy the horse, and I asked them one thing, is to give us complete rights on the horse. And to my surprise, they actually signed off on, we bought 50% of the horse with absolute control of the horse, following instructions that Frank had given me on how to do a deal when I first bought the first horse from. And we ended up buying El Prado. And it turned out to be an amazing stallion that actually was the first big one that we brought in. Initially that year, we stud that horse actually out at the Governor's Jones's farm for his first year. And at that point, I brought Tom Gentry out to see the horse, and Tom lost his mind and said, this is probably the best genetic bloodlines we can. And he went into the background because it was a Claiborne pedigree, and I'm going back in my years with Stollery. We dealt a lot with the Claiborne pedigrees, and now that we had them, we went off with El Prado. Tom sent five mares that year to him, and including a mare that turned out to be the Dam of Chindi. Okay, that horse was absolutely exceptional. I sent one myself, with Janufa, and she also had a stakes winner. And with the progress of that stallion, he started to reach very heights, and then we started to go and develop more stallions. Prior to that, a couple of years prior, I bought Frank a race filly that I was told by the trainer at the time that it wouldn't make the grade, and it was a filly called Barrio Mood, and she went on to become a multiple stakes winner and stakes place filly, and her half-brother came up for sale, and that was Touch Gold. We ended up buying that one. Awesome Again, we bought the Dam of Awesome Again, Primal Force. We're on the way down to Kentucky on the plane, and we're talking about the influence of British and Groom. And unbeknownst to myself, I mean, we were talking about, we had looked at the Gainswick catalog, and I talked about why he was sent to North America, and Frank says he never really looked into him. But then he went to the sales, and Andy Stronach at that point in time looked up this mare, and next thing, the hand is going up, and that's how we end up getting the Dam of Awesome Again. And when we bred her to Deputy Minister, it was something against, we had bought a no guarantee season. We needed to use the season because the mare that we'd actually bought her for was not ready. So we switched the mare over and we got Awesome Again. So it was, just seems to be good luck after good luck after good luck. And we've, you know, combined with our operation in Canada, which we dominate now, and the operation down here, we've got very, very strong in the stallion business. But we've tried to maintain a lot of our own stallion lines that we have developed. And we have been very much adamant in getting a hold of Breeders' Cup Classic winners because we feel they make very, very good stallions. And over the years, we've had quite a lot of them. But we've also taken another philosophy, too, is what we've done is we've tried to get some of the best bloodlines in the world. And hence, that was why we purchased at that time Northlight, an Epsom Derby winner by Danehill, out of a great race mare. But more importantly, it was the Ballymacall pedigree. And this was another one that I up-topped Coolmore in purchasing. May not turn out to be the absolute best stallion ever in the world, but he's a very consistent, good stallion. We also have stud one of the first sons of Sunday Silence, which is now Canada's leading sire by the name of Silent Name. We bought another son of Sadler's Wells called Sligo Bay out of Frank's, well, he used to call it Frank's family, but actually it's the old Winfield family. We couldn't get a son of Glory Song, so we went to, similar to what Tessie did many years ago, we went to the sister and we bought the Sadler's Wells out of the full sister of Glory Song. And that actually went on to be just a great pedigree. And he himself, that's a sire to plate winner, Oaks winner, a couple of Oaks winners. He's done very, very well in Canada. So,
yeah, Glorious Song. She was awesome, and that's the first time that I met Mr. Stronach was when he had Glorious Song, and she's been a tremendous producer herself.
Oh, it's a fantastic pedigree. It's like in Sligo Bay's pedigree. When we purchased him, and a very interesting. We went to actually buy the horse. And we had done a deal to buy the horse, and the horse at that point in time had not won a Grade One. But I was very impressed. I saw him break his maiden at the Curra. It was the last race I went with my mother, God rest her soul. But we went there to the Curra to watch the races, the last time probably I ever was with my mother going to the races. And she said, this is a, likes the pedigree, but all of a sudden she liked the way he moved. And she said, this is something you should be looking at. So I kept my eyes on him, followed the career of Sligo Bay, and he went on to end up becoming a Grade One winner. But we tried to buy him, and they, you know, for a lot of money, and then they changed their mind at the last moment, and so we waited. And the next year, after he'd won the Grade One, we bought him for half the price that we really had offered on the horse. So it turned out to be quite a good.
Nicely done.
Yeah, I would say so. That's a good deal.
Yeah.
That works out pretty well. We're going to talk about the current Adina Stallions here in just a minute. You heard Dermot mention some of those names, like Awesome Again and some of the Adina Springs North Stallions. But we're going to talk to Ken Wilkins here in just a minute. We'll get a little deeper look at some of those stallions after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ken, so many top stallions that we just touched on a little bit, but Awesome Again, Ghost Sapper, Macho Uno, Mucho Macho Man. Let's start with him. You talk about Mucho Macho Man, the horse that's been really good. Tell me a little bit about him.
Yeah, no, this horse is off to a tremendous, tremendous start. You look back on last year, it was his first crop, and Dermot, I think if he had 34 starters, and out of the 34 starters, he had 11 winners and three stake horses, a graded stakes winner, grade one stakes place, Mucho Gusto. They ran second to an absolute buzzsaw there in the La Salle, but he's a good horse in Baffert's barn, so we're looking forward to see if that horse can find a path to the first Saturday in May. So, the horse is because of the fact he won the Breeders' Cup Classic and was second in the Breeders' Cup Classic the year before that, to Fort Larned, by the way. You kind of tend to think, okay, this horse isn't going to be precocious. Foals are going to be later developing. We'll see much more success this year. But, I mean, you look at it, he's in the top 10 of the two-year-old crop, of the freshman crop last year. And, then you go back and look at his rest record. And this horse, surprisingly, was second in the two grade stakes races in New York as a two-year-old. To honor and serve. So he showed talent early on. And
he was up against it because he was a June foal.
He was a June 15th foal.
Exactly. So, I mean, when Mike and I first saw him at Gulfstream Park, he was grazing out front of Kathy Ritvo's barn. And, he didn't even look like he should be racing. I mean, he was not grown into himself yet. He's just a weedy, skinny-looking horse, so this is him, and following his career up and watching what he did, it was amazing because he was behind age-wise his whole life. And it wasn't until the year he won the Classic that he finally caught up and that his body filled out. He looked so good going in. I was never so sure of a horse winning the Classic as I was. And I mean, he just looked like a whole different animal, because I always have that in my mind, that skinny little kid grazing grass in January, you know, and he's a year and a half old, you know, and it's crazy. So he's so beautiful, and having the Reeves, you know, do the right thing with his babies, run them where they belong, and put them in the hands of good trainers, and selling them the right way. You know, I mean, it's huge help to him, but I'm not surprised at all that he's as good as he is.
That's exactly right. I mean, Dean's been a big guy. You know, he stayed in on the horse as owner, and he's been supporting him at the sale ring and racing him. And it's just been, trust me, there's not a bigger fan out there than Dean is on this horse. So yeah. It's a lot of pressure on us to see if we can help get the horse to the next level.
Well, we always see him in the airport more than any place else. He's always flying somewhere, and we talk about Mucho Macho Man all the time, because I'm a huge fan because of what the little relationship that I had with him over the years. But it's really exciting to watch those babies and see how good they are.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, several other stallions that we can talk about here. We have about 5 minutes left here, Ken. Let's jump on to who you want to go to next. Kappa Bastone, maybe? Talk a little bit about him. He's one of the newcomers, or is there somebody else you want to preview?
Point of Entry. There you go. I thought we'd be swing back to Point of Entry. Speaking of the Derby, this horse, surprisingly, in his second crop, has a colt on the dirt that ran second in the Kentucky Jockey Club in November. Brandon Walsh has a horse called, and forgive my French, but it is Plu Q Parfait. Speaking of names.
Yeah. not your favorite name?
Exactly. But that horse is it's in next weekend in the LeCompte. So that could be very exciting if we could get, really what, you know, if you look at this horse, 5 grade ones on the turf, has a horse on the dirt, but you go back and look, he Point of Entry broke his maiden on the dirt by 15 and a half lengths, and the other thing that I think is a clue that this horse really wants to be a good sire is, you know, he came out and he had 11 winners out of his first crop, and had probably one of the best colts of the year that year, Analyze It, who, you know, had the now infamous battle with the Catholic Boy with their races. That was in the first crop, and then the second crop he followed up with 14 winners, 2 fillies that won stakes races. They've won on the East Coast. I think there was a stakes winner in Canada, so on the Poly. So they're performing on all surfaces. They're performing early, and it's going to be very exciting to see how this horse develops. There's so much quality there with the pedigree and the just the quality that this horse brings.
His looks. He's one of the most spectacular looking horses. I mean, every time you come on the track, you just take your breath away.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You
know, amazing looking horse, and we've seen what Gio Ponti's done with dirt horses, right? It doesn't, just because you run on the turf all the time doesn't mean you can't get a dirt horse. And I've got
an expression: grass grows on dirt.
True enough.
Yeah, so we're excited. I mean, those two horses, and then the other one, Dermot, I thought we'd talk about, would be Shaman Ghost. And, you know, again, here is another step in the long and careful development of stallions that Frank has done. And this horse, I think, my experience has been that everybody that I've brought out to see this horse this year has absolutely loved him. And are sending mares to him. He went to California his first year. Frank wanted to support the California market there and did that. And he bred a good book of mares out there. He bred 92 mares last year. So, and those have worked their way here. We've got 4 that will foal in Canada. Those will probably end up in the Adena race stable. And there were some in November, and there were some in January. So those have found their way to this side of the country, but really excited to see how those things look. But this is, you know, for the price point that we have, I think he represents huge value to breeders.
Yeah, he proved himself on the racetrack. He was such a good racehorse, and Jerkins did such a great job with him. nice to see him get a square chance.
It was hard to get the horse away from Jerkins. He absolutely loved this horse. Loved him. Loved the horse. Yeah. And, you know, what's not to love?
Yeah, no doubt about it. A lot to love about all the Adina Stallions. You can visit adinastallions.com to learn more about all the stallions standing here in Kentucky and, of course, north of the border at Adina Springs North as well. Dermot Carty, Ken Wilkins in studio with us. Guys, you're primetime players, let me tell you. We had to work around a couple of technical difficulties this morning. You did it flawlessly. Thank you guys for being here, and thank you for all your support. Really do appreciate it, guys. All right, going to get to another commercial break. When we come back, our Industry Star of the Week segment, which is presented every week by Stuart Morris, we'll visit with our very own two-time Miss Connecticut, Acacia Courtney. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust Keep Safe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about Keep Safe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Castleton Lions is home to blue blood sprinter Justin Phillip and multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti. Justin Phillip is represented in 2018 by the exciting stakes winning filly Safe to Say and stakes placed runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. While seven-time Grade 1 winner Gio Ponti has produced Eclipse champion and Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong, along with Canadian classic hero Sir Dudley Diggs and Miss Technicality, winner of the Juvenile Filly Stakes at Kentucky Downs. Justin Phillip and Gio Ponti at Castleton Lions.
Gulfstream Park's championship meet runs December 1st through March 31st with live racing Wednesday through Sunday, with the $9 million Pegasus World Cup set for January the 26th. A program which also features the first running of the $7 million Pegasus Turf Cup and the return of the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship on Friday, January 25th and Saturday, January 26th. The $1 million Florida Derby on March 30th will wrap up the championship meet at Gulfstream Park. Visit GulfstreamPark.com.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you back with us this morning. Fun visit with the folks from Adina Springs, talking about that Adina Stallion roster in the last segment. And again, we apologize for some of those technical difficulties, but hey, it worked out okay. And you got a chance to hear all about those stallions. And if you have a mare and you're looking for a stallion to breed to, why not the Adina Stallions? Hey, don't forget that Blood Horse is the industry's only weekly magazine and tablet, and they've been covering thoroughbred racing and breeding for more than 100 years. That's right. If you want to follow the sport and the industry, there is no other way than with Blood Horse Magazine. And here's a special offer for you to take advantage of right now. You can save 70% off the cover price, plus get a 2019 Blood Horse wall calendar, which is valued at $24.95, all for free. Go to bloodhorse.com/winter special for more information on Blood Horse. All right, so our previous segment, we were going to visit with Acacia Courtney, but we moved it to this segment in deference to our special guest in studio. So without further ado, this is your Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. And 1 week ago, this is the way it sounded in the state of Connecticut.
That means, Acacia Courtney, you are Miss Connecticut, USA, 2019.
Yeah, that's the way it sounded when Acacia Courtney, our HRN analyst, longtime colleague, longtime friend of the program, and Gulfstream Park racing analyst, when she was crowned Miss Connecticut USA last Saturday night. It is the second time she's been honored as Miss Connecticut. She will now compete for Miss USA sometime in May, and she joins us now as our Industry Star of the Week. Acacia, first of all, congratulations. So proud of you. Well done.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you so much. It still feels very surreal. And you mentioned the second time in Miss Connecticut, just as a clarification, because I know I've gotten a lot of questions about it. I competed previously in the Miss America organization, and as you said, now I'm getting ready to go into Miss USA. So it's actually totally separate. I had to start from square one again. So it's a huge honor, and I'm still on cloud nine.
When is the Miss USA competition?
It will be sometime in May, most likely. Might be June. We don't know yet. It's traditionally around that time of year, but there are still actually a few more state pageants to happen. So I assume sometime after that they'll announce the date and the location, but I'll definitely keep everybody posted.
All right. Jude mentioned earlier that he is not really a pageant guy, and I know when you look at him, that's kind of hard to believe, right?
Right.
Shocking.
Hey, you know, I'm not really either, Acacia. I've watched it on television, and you see the contestants narrow it down to the top five and then the top couple, mm-hmm. and then you see the winner crowned, which is all very cool. But to know somebody that has been in that position is even a more thrilling experience, at least for me it was, to watch you be crowned. So talk about what goes into competing in a pageant at that caliber.
Oh, there's so much preparation that goes into it. Any of my regular colleagues can tell you about even just the basis of preparing for the swimsuit competition, the eating really healy. Ron Nicoletti always teases me, says, you know, you just eat weeds. You have a salad every day. That's all you're eating. But it's really so much a lifestyle. So you have a swimsuit competition, yes, and so there is physical fitness involved, but it's also about a confidence and about embracing your own beauty, your own self-worth. All of that goes into it as well. You have the evening gown competition, and then what's probably the most important is the interview part of the competition. So obviously being well-spoken is important, but these women are so accomplished in what they do with their careers, their education, and community service as well.
Yeah, there's so much that goes into it. You know, a lot of people think you just put on a dress and walk down the runway and you know, that's it. But there's so much work. I mean, it's like a full-time job to accomplish this.
It definitely is. It's an everyday preparation, really. It's not just kind of like I decided a week ago to go into a pageant. It's something I've been preparing for months. And now, I mean, I was just crowned a week ago, and we're already starting the Miss USA prep. So it'll be a really intensive couple of months for sure. But it's very exciting because it really is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get to go to Miss USA.
How does that affect your role down at Gulfstream for the championship meet?
I'm really lucky. They've been so incredibly supportive. So for the next couple of months, I'm going to be doing as much of both as I possibly can.
Yeah, I can imagine it's going to be a busy schedule for you. Not only do you have to fulfill the obligations of Miss Connecticut USA, mm-hmm. but you also have to fulfill those obligations on the racing side of things with Gulfstream
exactly.
Park. And you got a big one coming up in a couple of weeks with the Pegasus World Cup. We're going to make the trip down to broadcast it here on the network. Can't wait to be down there. But You have the Pegasus World Cup, the Pegasus World Cup Turf. Can you give us a little insight into some of the horses that we might see?
Sure. The dirt race has really come together really impressively. It's a very competitive field, of course, headlined by Breeders' Cup Classic winner Accelerate. You do have City of Light in there as well. He won the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. The Mexican Triple Crown winner and Clásico winner Kukulcan is coming back from Mexico. He'll be ridden by Frankie Dettori. Florida Derby winner Audible. Just a really, really exciting field that's assembled. And I think it's going to be a good betting race as well, including our hometown hero, if you will, in Gunavera. And on the turf side, I know Channelmaker is going to be running, and that race is still really kind of taking shape a bit. But it looks like from the horses that I have heard are potentially running, the likes of Yoshida, it really could be a strong race as well.
Yeah, with all that money on the line, certainly it's going to pick up a lot of people's heads, and it's just a matter of having the horses ready on that day. So we'll see what develops there, but I'm sure that's going to be a good race as well. It's always a great day of racing just in general. So many stakes and fantastic horses, so it's a day that you don't want to miss.
I'm sure it will be jam-packed. For sure. Once again, the entertainment lineup. I know Snoop Dogg is performing. Ronnie Nicoletti is really excited about that.
Is he doing a duet with Snoop Dogg?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure we know where we'll find him. But, you know, the entertainment's been a big thing the past couple of years. And just trying new things every year at the Pegasus. So for those that need tickets or want more information, everything's on PegasusWorldCup.com.
I think we need to get Snoop Dogg on the program.
I think it'd be cool.
He's a big Steeler fan. We have that in common.
Right. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? We'll bring Snoop Dogg on. Maybe have him sit in with us for a little bit as an analyst. I'm sure he can talk a little horse racing.
Sure. Well, I'm sure he'll learn.
If not, he's talented enough to make it up. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it. Acacia Courtney, two-time Miss Connecticut with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And Acacia, when I say it like that, am I saying it correctly? Two-time Miss Connecticut?
It is. True, yes, but like I said, they're actually totally separate organizations. So now, especially being representative of Miss USA, I really kind of am just focusing on the Miss USA part of things. So that's the current, and that's the organization that I'm representing currently. But I'm very lucky to have been able to now represent my state a couple of times.
Yeah, Miss Connecticut USA, Acacia Courtney here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. She is our industry star of the week. This segment all presented by our friend Stuart Morris. Acacia, we will let you go. We know it's a very busy day. Appreciate the visit here this morning. Congratulations again on that tremendous accomplishment, and we can't wait to see you when we get to Gulfstream in a couple weeks.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys. It's always fun to come on the radio with you.
All right. Acacia Courtney here on HRRN. You know, that was the way that we were kind of put in touch with Acacia, was through her original Miss Connecticut title for Miss America. She was making an appearance on a small terrestrial radio station in Connecticut, and she was doing an interview with the host, and one of Kurt Becker's colleagues on MRN, the Motorsports Radio Network, was driving through that area of Connecticut, happened to catch the interview with Acacia, and one thing she mentioned was that she was passionate about thoroughbred aftercare, and that she was looking forward to getting into a broadcasting career, which would include broadcasting racing on radio. Those were her words in that interview. And he heard this. He reached out to Kurt and said, "Hey, I know you do racing on radio with HRN. He said, "Acacia Courtney, Miss Connecticut, is interested in doing this as a career. Would you guys have any interest in using her at some point?" Well, sure enough, one thing led to another. Kurt was able to get a hold of Acacia, put me in touch with her, and she became one of our colleagues here on the network and a member of our family, and pretty cool the way those things work out.
Yeah, that's really a wild story. I've never heard that story before. Yeah. That's pretty cool. And she hit the ground running. You know, she started out with zero experience working for HRN, and once she did a few shows for us and honed her skills a little bit, everybody wanted her.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the MO. I always say that HRN is a great farm system for major talent, because people go on and they do big things after they leave us, and that's fine with me. It's great to see people like Acacia doing wonderful things in our sport and then out of our sport, too, with something she's very passionate about, and that's competing in those pageants. And we'll get a chance to see her in May in Miss USA. And by the way, I think that's a Fox event, so I think it is nationally televised. So
yeah,
keep an eye out for that.
Is. Yeah,
and we'll have all of HRN Nation cheering for Acacia, no doubt. Again, she is your industry star of the week, and we remind you that our good friend Stuart Morris, who sponsors that segment, offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation, and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his entire team. Their success is, quite honestly, because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including the likes of Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales. He'll be very busy in Florida, I'm sure, with those sales down at OBS and with Phasic Tipton, too. So make sure you stop by and tell Stuart you heard about him right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We touched on the Pegasus World Cup with Acacia. Again, we're going to be there in a couple of weeks. Our broadcast coming your way on January 26th. We'll have a couple hours of coverage, the Gulfstream Park turf, which is now the Pegasus World Cup turf, and the Pegasus World Cup part of that program. Accelerate, the Breeders' Cup Classic winner, is pointing for the Pegasus, which adds a lot of intrigue to the race. He's probably going to be among the favorites, if not the favorite, after winning the Classic and having that tremendous year in 2018. He's up for Horse of the Year honors against Justify and Monomoy Girl. We'll find out if indeed he's the one who walks away with the title coming up right before the Pegasus, 2 days before when they announce the Eclipse Awards and have that presentation at Gulfstream Park. Judy worked yesterday, did Accelerate. He worked at Santa Anita, 7 furlongs, 127 1/5. So he appears to be on his A game moving into the Pegasus World Cup.
Yeah, well, he's obviously the horse to beat. Very talented horse, and John's had time to give him a little breather and then prep him for this race. He should be very tough.
Yeah, I think he will be. Does he get Horse of the Year?
No.
You don't think so?
Not a chance.
Yeah. Justify?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I made a case. You were gone. You were in Chicago over the holidays, and I made a case that it shouldn't even be a debate, in my opinion anyways, right? It's got to be Justify.
Yeah.
Has to be. It shouldn't even be a debate because of the fact that you've only had, what, 13 Triple Crown winners in the history of the sport, and just because he did it on the heels of American Pharoah a couple of years later doesn't diminish his accomplishment, and I don't think Justify is getting the respect that he deserves as a Triple Crown winner. To even be in some kind of a debate for Horse of the Year, to me, is mind-boggling.
Well, you can, you know, people can debate anything. I mean, there's all kinds of opinions out there, but, you know, I mean, at least traditionally, if you win the Triple Crown, you're the Horse of the Year.
Yep.
I mean, we've already discussed earlier this morning that the Kentucky Derby is the most important race in the United States, and that's hard to debate too, but you'll have other people say otherwise.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
After that, winning the Triple Crown, I mean, like you say, 13 total horses in the history of American racing. And people will say, oh, yeah, some of those were retrofitted because, you know, there was no Triple Crown per se and all.
Yeah.
That. But still, it's 13 horses out of quite a few. So.
Back to accelerating the Pegasus World Cup for a minute. The horse I'm excited to see in there is the Mexican Triple Crown winner, the undefeated Mexican Triple Crown winner. And I'm going to say, am I saying it right? Kukulcan?
Yeah, it's like that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I think that's how Acacia pronounced it. Yeah. You know, a horse that obviously has done nothing wrong. We're going to find out if he belongs in this kind of competition. You would think probably not, but who knows? Right, he's an intriguing horse in the Pegasus World Cup.
Undefeated, he was impressive in the Clásico del Caribe
at Gulfstream Park.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, can't take anything away from him. He's done everything asked. Whether he's in the same category as Accelerate, you would say probably not, but maybe so.
You know, true World Cup this year too. You have a Japanese horse, Aerolite, who is pointing for the Pegasus World. Well, he's pointing for the turf, I guess, right? But again, when you look at the whole day, the Pegasus World Cup turf, the Pegasus World Cup, it really is turning into a world event with horses coming from all over the world for these two races now.
Yeah, well, when you hang up that kind of purse money, you're going to get people.
That helps.
Yeah.
That helps.
It's not the Kentucky Derby. You need purse money.
I saw Yoshida's also appointed for that $7 million Pegasus World Cup turf. They're going to run them on the grass. Could be very tough in there, right?
Why not? Absolutely.
Yeah, could be very tough in there. All right, so again, that coverage comes up January 26th here on the network. You can visit our website, by the way, horseracingradio.net, not only for podcasts of all of our programs that we tell you about every single week, but you can also check out our entire 2019 broadcast schedule, or at least the first half of the year, which is set. We're still waiting on a couple of things to set the second half of the year, but the first half of the year, pretty well set. You can visit horseracingradio.net and see which races we'll be part of on radio here in 2019. If you can't make it to a TV, we'll have you covered on the radio side. All right, we threw out a poll question, or at least a question on our Twitter feed, and we wanted to know, what is your all-time favorite racehorse name? And just going to flip through some of the results here. Dukin with Dale. How about that one? That's pretty cool. Zippy Chippy. Who can forget about Zippy Chippy? That's a great name. Drop Your Drawers. Really? Was that a horse name? I guess it was. Terry Wallace would call the fire out of him when he ran at Oaklawn Racing. That's coming from our good friend Mark Toothaker at Spendthrift. So, yeah, got to believe that's legit. How about Songbird? Lost in the Fog. That's a cool name. Lost in the Fog.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a cool horse, too.
Yeah.
He could really run.
The Pizza Man. That one works.
He delivers.
He delivers. He delivers. Animal Kingdom. A vote for Animal Kingdom. Northern Dancer is a beautiful name. FNX. Wooloo Maloo. Hey, that's the one that Dermot Carty had touched on before we came on with the Adina segment. Yeah. Wooloo Maloo. All one word, by the way. California Chrome, Wise Dan, Secretariat. Some favorite names of that listener. Here you go. How can you forget about this one? My wife knows everything. The wife doesn't know. Yes. The famous Larry Colmus call at Monmouth Park.
Two different horses.
Yep. Two different horses there. I like this one. Goody Four Shoes. We need Goody Four Shoes. I do like Not a Cat But a Llama. That's a good one. All one word. Artie Schiller, Skip Away, Ruffian. Ooh, Glue Stick. Wow. I don't know if that's I guess it is probably. Who knows? Hannah Who? Let's see. What other ones do we have? Mind Your Biscuits, Woman on a Binge. Tin Show, and You're a Nation. Those are the votes that have come in so far.
Wow.
Yeah, say that one fast. Yeah. But, so I went slow with that one, by the way. Tweet to us now. Question of the day. What is your all-time favorite racehorse name? And not sure if we'll have time to get through many more, but we'll try to pass them along on the air as we move throughout the program here this morning. We're going to go ahead and get to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Joe Harper, who will receive the Eclipse Award of Merit at the Eclipse Awards in less than 2 weeks, those taking place at Gulfstream Park. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
This successful son of AP Indy has sired six millionaires, including Eclipse champion West Coast, a multiple Grade 1 winner and runner-up in the $16 million Pegasus World Cup. This year, Flatter is adding even more stakes winners to his outstanding record at stud. In the auction ring, Flatter topped the 2018 Fiesing Tipton July sale with a $520,000 yearling. Success on the track, success in the ring. Flatter, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Heard about the new 3E tractors from John Deere?
What's new?
New look, better maneuverability than those other color tractors, added conveniences like onboard diagnostics to make for an easier day and all-around greater performance.
Well, sounds interesting.
They also have one of the lowest sticker prices in the industry.
Sounds like I'm in.
Just head to your John Deere dealer. I'm sure they'll take care of you.
Sounds like they already have.
Introducing the all-new 2018 John Deere 3E Series tractors. More functionality, same affordability.
In Kentucky, our biggest celebrities have four legs, and thanks to Kentucky Proud Horse Country, you can now have unprecedented access to these equine stars. From foaling barn to finish line and beyond, you can see it all. Log on to visithorsecountry.com to book your one-of-a-kind experience. With more than 30 horse country locations throughout the Bluegrass, you'll get access to multi-million dollar farms and facilities featuring Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown winners, famous broodmares, and champion sires. Space is limited, so book now at visithorsecountry.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Contributing, finishing toward the inside. Contributing now, angles out with one last shot. Goldberry charging down the center of the course. It's excessive spending coming down toward the final 16th. Contributing and on the outside. Goldberry up to the front. It's Goldberry and contributing. Goldberry and contributing. Contributing for Joe Bravo and Nose to Goldberry in the Panzeretta.
Contributing scored in the Panzeretta Stakes at Fairgrounds this past weekend, becoming the 120th stakes winner for Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro, making her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro is the horse with the Midas touch, having produced 21 career group or grade one winners worldwide, including Astern, who will stand his second season at Darley this year. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Where the turf meets the surf, down at Old El Mar, take a plane, take a train, take a car. There's a smile on every face, and a winner in each race, where the turf meets the surf. At Del Mar.
Well, that'll warm you up on a cold Saturday morning. Start thinking about where the turf meets the surf at Old Del Mar. And happy to have you back with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. And JT, I know as a native of Southern California, that's a song that has to just kind of take you back and make you think of some pretty good times.
Oh, yeah. I've been listening to that song since I was a little kid. And, of course, saddling my first horse at Del Mar and spending every summer down there for many, many years. And my family loves it. They all move down there. They're not stupid. That's a great place to be. And the racetrack has so many fantastic memories for me. Lots of great days at Del Mar. Some of my best success came where the turf meets the surf.
Well, few people have spent more summers at Old Del Mar than Joe Harper, who is the chief executive officer of the Del Mar Thoroughbred Club. He has been there for 40 years. Yeah, four decades. Started at Del Mar in 1978 and will receive the Eclipse Award of Merit coming up, the Eclipse Awards on January 24th at Gulfstream Park in recognition of a lifetime of outstanding achievement in thoroughbred racing. And Joe, kind enough to join us now up bright and early in Southern California. Joe, appreciate the visit and congratulations on that tremendous honor.
Well, thank you. It obviously is a great honor, and it's very kind of them to recognize the old guy. I think, you know, you get old enough, they start giving you things, but this is a real honor for me, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it certainly is. When you talk to people about Del Mar, what makes it so special? What things do you want them to know about the racetrack and about the location?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, we're it's easy to be successful when you're, you know, a couple of feet from the Pacific Ocean in a vacation destination spot. But I think it's the entertainment value. It's the fun place. You know, there's lots of things going on down here in this area, and Del Mar is certainly one of them. It's I think we've always tried to market the place as just come out and have fun, whether or not you're a race tracker or been hanging around the horses for a long time. But it's a party. It's a great atmosphere. And I think that's, you know, the great employees that we've got there, that we're all pretty friendly. We all like each other, and it's a great work environment.
When we were talking about you coming on the show earlier today, I talked about you and the fact that you know, you've done so much for Del Mar, but you've always done it in a fun manner. Your sense of humor, your love of the game, and the way that you presented it comes from the top down. Everybody there is in a good mood because when you come to work in the morning, you're in a good mood and you're always smiling and you've always got great stuff going on. And you've been like that. I've known you for 40 years, and you've been like that every day.
Yeah, I think, well, there are some days, but...
Well, we all have those days, but for the most part.
But, I mean, who wouldn't you be happy living here and working with these great guys? But I think it is. I think you know, if you're lucky, a business, not just a racetrack, will take on a personality of its own. And I think the people that run it are really the tone setters for that type of personality. And I think that, you know, with the Hollywood roots that we have here at Del Mar, where the old Bing Crosby and the old golden era of Hollywood kind of founded the place way back in the 30s. And I think that's kept on. I mean, that's kind of my heritage growing up in a motion picture family. And it was just a fit, you know. The first time I came to work down here in the 60s as a cinema photographer. And I think Jude was working in the press box somewhere in there, too. And so it was, you know, it was always part of my heart when I came down here and saw what it was, you know.
Joe, you mentioned growing up in a motion picture family, the grandson of Cecil B. DeMille. Talk a little bit about the early days of Joe Harper and being introduced to that side of things and to racing in general.
Well, I think, you know, growing up in you know, where, you know, every time he came home, there was Charlton Heston or Yul Brynner or some Hollywood personality there, Gary Cooper. It was spending, you know, hours on the soundstage, being a circus performer or a Hebrew slave or whatever they stuck me in. I tell you, the circus performer at 7 was easy. The Hebrew slave at 11, I looked more like an Irish paper boy with a bad wig on. I think that's why they... I could hear my grandfather. I move him back a little bit. You know? 10,000 people in the Exodus. I was 10,001 in the back.
But, that's great.
It was great growing up in there. And you have a sense of entertainment. You know, what gets into people to a movie is not that remote from what gets people into a racetrack. It's all about entertainment and put him in a neat environment, and that's, you know, I think my background in the growing up probably helped me in racing. You know?
Well, it certainly shows because you get fantastic crowds, and there's always something extra at Del Mar. It's not just going to the track. There's you know, there's shows after the races. There's events in the infield. There's always something going on there that's not strictly involved with racing, but ways to get new people in. And I know it's a constant struggle. You mentioned me working in the press box. The thing that used to irritate me the most is when people would say, "Oh, the horses are running at Del Mar," and I go, "What are we doing?" You know. It's such a great place to be in the color and the excitement. And now you've turned it into a fashion event and a party and all of these things. And it's really a be seen kind of place. And people love to go. I mean, they can't wait to get there.
Yeah, we're lucky there. And I think, you know, it all stemmed back from trying to figure out why people didn't go. You know, when we did some market research and asked them, they've been to Del Mar, and they said no. He said why, and they couldn't give us an idea. They couldn't give us a reason, and so then you realize, oh well, they just don't want to. They don't care about going to racing, you know. So let's give them a reason to come out there, and that's when the concert started, and the food trucks, and the family fun days, and everything we could think of. almost every day there's something other than just racing going on there. And I think we've made a lot of fans for Del Mar. I hope we made a few fans for racing in general, but Del Mar seems to have a life of its own down there. And we've been lucky.
Even Camp Del Mar, what a fantastic concept to get, young people involved. I mean, little kids go to Camp Del Mar and that's got to rub off on a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, the parents sometimes say, are you going to teach them to bet? hey, that's an idea. Yeah. Why not? Well, we do have a bouncy ball race in between the races, so that's been a big hit, yeah.
Visiting with Joe Harper, the chief executive officer of the Del Mar Thoroughbred Club. He will receive the Eclipse Award of Merit on January 24th at Gulfstream Park, and that is an honor that recognizes a lifetime of outstanding achievement in thoroughbred racing. Joe, you've been credited with so many iconic achievements at Del Mar over the years. When you think back on those 40 years, what are some of the things that you are most proud of?
Well, I think first we have to say that I take credit for all the other people that are doing the hard work. And without them, we'd be nothing. But I don't know. I mean, we're having fun down here. It just the pieces seem to fit as we went along and came up with stuff. And Craig Dato's a super marketing guy and he gets it. The top guys down here are all kind of all on the same page. It just works, you know? And so I'm not sure you point out any one particular thing, but I do think it's a feeling. It's an environment that we've created that makes people want to come. You know,
that whole Pacific Classic thing has worked out pretty good.
Yeah, it sure did. John maybe was on our original director and president of Del Mar, and I think he had more horses in training in this country than anybody else at one point. And John would say, "We have to get $1 million raise." I said, "Boss, we're not making quite enough money, but." Of course, finally we did make enough money to put $1 million race on. Of course, he won the first one with Best Pal, but it certainly is that $1 million figure always puts you on the map a bit, and we get some pretty good horses out here for it. And Breeders' Cup was the big deal. I mean, thank goodness Craig Fravel. I hate to lose him, but I think we came out a lot better with him being at Breeders' Cup than actually at Del Mar because. He made the Eastern contingent, I think, understand what Del Mar was about and how we could handle a Breeders' Cup, and seemed to work pretty good when we had it here, and they're coming back, so I'll be looking forward to it.
Yeah, that was one of the most outstanding Breeders' Cups of all time, I thought. I mean, it's something that I waited for many, many years to have Breeders' Cup at Del Mar. That was just awesome.
Yeah, the plant, when we built, redid this plant, rebuilt the whole track in the early 90s, that was always kind of in the back of our minds was, let's build this place where the high end can, utilize it on those kind of days. And so it lent itself to a Breeders' Cup and we purposely kept the crowd down, to under 40,000 just so people would be able to move around easier and do that. But we had so many high-end spots that the price points were certainly that made it the most successful financial Breeders' Cup ever. So that was they liked that. We liked that, and everybody discovered San Diego and Del Mar. So I think I look forward to coming back.
Joe, you touched on the early days and being around the cinema folks. Were you always thinking that? At one point in your life, you were going to be involved in racing in some capacity, or was there a time when you said, you know what, maybe I want to do something a little bit different?
Well, I think in those early days, being on the set and everything, I thought, gee, this acting thing might be kind of fun. My first real job other than cleaning out stalls at the family ranch was delivering the mail at MGM Studios, which opened my eyes to a lot of the business that I didn't know existed. But I think that, we always had horses. My mom bred them, raced them. She was the first female president of the Breeders Association. She was a dynamic person in the sport. And I think, you know, seeing her and the fun she had and it kind of got me toward it. I was always out at the track as a kid. And, in fact, I remember as a little boy, sitting with her outside the stable gate at Hollywood Park, and we didn't go in right away. I said, "Mom, why don't we go in?" She said, "Because the sun isn't up yet, and they wouldn't let women in the backstretch until the sun came up."
Wow.
Always, yeah, yeah. Those are the good old days, right?
Yeah.
I mean, things like that, that just, you know, what she went through and how she did it, and she was such a great role model for me, and that I figured, you know, if she can have this much fun and enjoyment out of it, maybe I ought to give it a try. And then Joe Burnham, this great, you know, cameraman, producer of many TV shows involving racing, came along and offered me a job. And I said, oh, okay. So that kind of got me working at Santa Anita during the 1966-67 racing season. Was the first year that I actually had a job at a racetrack. And it was fun. It was, you know, Santa Anita, Hollywood, and Del Mar. And that was the circuit we were on as a camera guy. And you know, I was hooked.
Well, a lot of people don't remember the days when Del Mar was actually like a B track, where the purses were really small and all the jocks left after Hollywood Park to go to Saratoga and that. But I'm old enough now. I remember that. And it's really funny now when I tell people that Del Mar used to be that way. It wasn't always the great place that we're so used to now. They're always surprised, like it was always that way. But in the 40 years that you've been involved, the purses have gone from, you know, $8,000 into the millions of dollars. And it's just a tribute to what you've done all those years and done it methodically and expertly and just built it up to what it is now.
Well, thanks, Jude. I think, you know, the whole concept behind the Del Mar Thoroughbred Club when we came in to get the lease back in the 60s was, you know, hey, let's put all the money back into the facility. Let's make this place cool. It could have gone country fair direction or Saratoga direction. And I think when you figure out that when you can make a money to and put it all back into the facility in one form or another, that's a great payoff. And it's worked so well over the years of, you know, I mean, last year we'll put $12 million into this facility through profits from racing. And it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't go into dividends for directors, or it doesn't go anywhere off the track. It goes right into Del Mar. And that capital improvement fund that we've built up over the years has really led to the success of building a new racetrack and just keeping all the improvements up to date.
Joe, break out your crystal ball. What does the future hold for Del Mar?
Well, I'd like to think we can keep this roll going. I think that, you know, I mean, I'm stepping back a little bit. Josh Rubenstein is our new president, and he's been here since he was in high school. Great kid, great smart. And I always maintain that if you aren't smart enough, you ought to surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. Sometimes that could be pretty easy, but, you know, the people we have now here working here, they understand it, they get it, they're smart. And I think the future is in their hands, really, and we can continue the direction that we've gone in of the entertainment value and you know, the best racing we can get and just keep our attitude happy and above board. I think you're going to have the best shot of keep this thing going the way it is.
You know, one of the true good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing, Joe Harper, the chief executive officer of the Del Mar Thoroughbred Club, with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, appreciate the visit here this morning. Appreciate you getting up early with us on the West Coast, and look forward to seeing you at Gulfstream Park. And congratulations again on that honor. Enjoy your special night at the Eclipse Awards.
Hey, thanks a lot, fellas. It's been good talking to you guys.
All right, Joe Harper here on HRRN and all class. And you can hear he's very humble, even after these 40 years of success and everything that he's accomplished. And he really has the good of the sport at heart with every move that he makes at Del Mar.
Yeah, I mean, you should see him in action, like going up to Starbucks in the morning and talking about the track with people. And, you know, a lot of people in downtown Del Mar, they know who he is, but there's a lot of visitors that come in, and somehow the conversation always turns to Del Mar.
Yeah.
And whether they know anything about it or not. So it's really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And he's a cool guy and well-deserving of that honor coming up at the Eclipse Awards. Going to get to another break. We'll come back and wrap this one up. Tell you what's ahead on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the Equine Forum, and it's all presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Power.
Taprit is still there. Master Plan is gaining. Master Plan at Taprit. Taprit still in front. Master Plan too late. Taprit will do it.
Passion.
It's Taprit. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill. Well done, young man. We'll report home 4 lengths to the good.
Performance.
Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning two-year-old campaign, Taprit set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his three-year-old season. Among the best-bred sons of Taprit ever to enter stud, out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple Grade Stakes producer, Appealing Zophie. Taprit, standing for $12,500 at Gainsway.
Power. Passion, performance, you know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Welcome to Jimmy John's.
Hi, your new 9-grain wheat sub is so good. How do you make it?
With the highest quality ingredients and love. I mean, we definitely don't sing at lullabies when it's baking. Lullabies are what parents sing to babies.
Right.
And we don't use a baby carrier to carry the warm, fresh 9-grain wheat subs to the cooling racks. I mean, they're not babies. They're for making delicious sandwiches.
Okay, I'll take a turkey tom.
Oh, don't name them. It makes it harder.
Try our new 9-grain wheat sub, Jimmy John's. Wheat yeah, freak yeah.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
2 years ago today, Motown scored an authoritative victory in the Grade 2 Remsen in his stakes debut before going on to demonstrate an impressive turn of foot when winning the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby at 3. New to Coolmore America for 2019, Motown is a highly credentialed, beautiful young son of Uncle Mo, who has established himself as a leading sire with his runners on both dirt and turf. Motown is very attractively priced, and being such a good-looking horse, it is no surprise that he is proving incredibly popular with breeders. Call Coolmore America to book to him now before it's too late.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Welcome back. Mike Penn and Jude Feld getting ready to wrap up this January 12th edition of the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Our thanks to our sponsor for the month of January, that is Red Brand Fence, making this show possible, along with all of our sponsors who help support the program throughout the year. Really do appreciate it, and really appreciate all of our guests being with us here this morning, including Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs. He was with us in the first half of the show. If you missed it, he was great talking about the purse increase, not only to the Kentucky Derby, but to the Kentucky Oaks and several other stakes races at Churchill in the spring meet. He joined us in the first half of the show. Head back and listen to the interview on our podcast, horseracingradio.net. You can listen at your leisure. Dermot Carty and Ken Wilkins were here from Edina Springs to preview that Edina Stallion roster. Acacia Courtney, our industry star of the week, Miss Connecticut USA. She'll compete for that honor in May. And until then, you can catch her at Gulfstream Park as an analyst during the championship meet. She was with us right around 9:15 Eastern, and then Joe Harper, tremendous in the last segment. Again, a podcast of this program available on our website, horseracingradio.net, shortly after we finish up at 10 o'clock Eastern time. Jude, that poll question, what is your favorite, all-time favorite racehorse name? It got an awful lot of response here today. I don't know if I can flip through these responses quick enough to get to everybody, but there were some good ones that that came out. Trying to find a few more here before we wrap it up. Megavolt. There's one. Somebody likes Megavolt. I told you mine. Flat Fleet Feet. I thought was a cool name. Mr. Sneak a Snack. used to run at Rockingham up in New Hampshire. And then Steelers over Ravens, probably another favorite of mine. Although this year it's not very appropriate.
Let's not forget.
But I like the fact that horse was a Maryland bred.
Let's not forget Splitting Headache.
Splitting Headache. Yeah, there's another one.
By the Axe, the second out of Top of the Morning.
Oh, there you go. But we want to thank everybody who participated in that, too. Continue to chime in, and we'll try to retweet some of those and get the word out as we move throughout the rest of the morning here and the rest of the weekend. No race broadcast for us this weekend, but that ends very quickly. 2 weeks away from the Pegasus World Cup, we'll make our way to Gulfstream Park. We will be there. Our entire broadcast team is going to be a really big show, and we can't wait to get back down to Gulfstream and bring you that coverage January 26th right here on the network.
You sound like Ed Sullivan. Really big show.
Really big show. Should be fun. Going to be a good race, too. I mean, come on. You're talking about those two races, the Pegasus World Cup Turf and the Pegasus World Cup on the same program?
And there's a bunch of other stakes, too. It's a huge day.
Yeah, simply spectacular. All right, again, our thanks to all of our special guests, to all of our listeners here this morning. Our thanks to Chauncey, Sean C., for handling all of our social media for us. Really appreciate his help this morning and every Saturday morning. And, of course, our producer, Lee Delapina, handling everything here in studio. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Good night, Barbados.